Welcome to the Principled Podcast, brought to you by LRN. The Principled Podcast brings together the collective wisdom on ethics, business and compliance, transformative stories of leadership, and inspiring workplace culture. Listen in to discover valuable strategies from our community of business leaders and workplace changemakers.
Welcome to Principled. As LRN turns 25 this year, we are delighted to share this next episode in the Principled Podcast series. Today, I have Joe Henry joining us. He is the U.S. Compliance Officer for Braskem, a Brazilian petrochemical company. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
It's great to have you here. You know, I always enjoy learning about the unique backgrounds and journeys into the field of compliance and ethics. And I think you bring quite a colorful story coming into it, and certainly not a conventional one. I understand that you are a chemical engineer.
I am a chemical engineer by training, practiced only 3 years. I wouldn't trust me with any reactors or valves at this point in my career.
And tell us a little bit about how you went from the field of engineering into kind of your career path into ethics and compliance.
Well, I started as a chemical engineer for IBM. After a few years, they were asking various engineers to consider roles in their sales organization. So they basically were taking people out of manufacturing and putting them to customer-fronting organizations such as sales. So I actually became what was called a systems engineer. It's more of a technical sales support role. I did that for 8 years. Eventually, I was hired by one of my customers, SmithKline-Beecham at the time, to install some technology, and I became a project and eventually project program director with GlaxoSmithKline, which was the merger of SmithKline and Glaxo. And my last systems work was with the compliance department of GlaxoSmithKline in 2003, and I've been a compliance officer ever since.
So that's an interesting migration kind of going into it. So you've been both on the lens, both internally and also kind of from the customer side. Now, coming from more of kind of, I would say, pharma organization into chemicals or petrochemical, tell us a little bit more about Braskem as an organization.
So Braskem, we are 8,000 employees worldwide. We're headquartered in Brazil, with operations in Brazil, Mexico, Germany, the Netherlands, and the U.S. We do about $15 billion a year in revenue. In North America, we make polypropylene and polyethylene, which are plastic materials that go into automobiles with bumpers and dashboards. They're used in food and beverage packaging, and we also use them in these materials in hybrid batteries.
Tell me more about kind of your oversight, because you are the U.S. compliance officer, but you have a very broad global focus.
So I am the U.S. compliance officer, but I have some global responsibilities, probably because of my experience with GlaxoSmithKline and in the industry. Our chief compliance officer relies on me to lead several global initiatives, our compliance risk management globally, our business courtesies policy, our anti-corruption compliance policies. And I've recently been assigned our project to be ISO 37001, which is the anti-bribery and corruption standard, to have it certified by June 2021. I travel to Brazil about 5 times a year and to Mexico and Europe about 1 time a year. So I have a bit of a global role in addition to my U.S. role, but my first responsibility is U.S. compliance officer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, Joe, coming from GlaxoSmithKline, which was a larger, organization, 100,000 employees worldwide, truly from an industry standpoint, understood the need for an established compliance program. And then now shifting to not only industry, but just a smaller size, newer organization. Tell me a little bit about building that business case for the need to build an ENC strategy?
Well, I did have the advantage of being, we are under a compliance monitorship overseen by the Department of Justice. So the company knows we have to do this work. I talk about an internal control spectrum with the organization. At one end of the spectrum is anarchy, and then you move up to low control, and then you move to disciplined, and then if you go too far, you get to bureaucracy. So I really emphasize the importance of having a disciplined approach to our controls into how we operate. And we've even had some issues in the U.S. with expense reporting fraud, that sort of thing. So it's really about saying, I want to get you to that discipline point, and we're going to zealously guard the line between discipline and bureaucracy. We're going to implement controls. We don't know that they're all going to work. And we may see there are some controls that tell us nothing. If they do, then that will get rid of them. And people are usually skeptical about that at first. Oh, well, here comes the compliance officer with a bunch of bureaucracy. But when you go in and say, we're going to try these things, and if this does become too bureaucratic or it's not helpful, we're going to get rid of it. And when you do that a couple of times, all right, the compliance officer walks the talk about being ethical, with integrity, and being transparent.
Typically, compliance officers will establish revised policies, essentially as the guardrails for these types of practices. But policies, we know, the research shows, doesn't necessarily transform behavior. How are you leading kind of the decision-making on the ground locally? I mean, clearly, as a global organization, there's still going to be some kind of local cultural nuances around meals, entertainment, and so forth.
Excellent question. I'll give you a real-life example. So we talk about business courtesies, and we define that as business, meals, entertainment, hospitality. Brazil gave me a policy to implement in the U.S. and said, here's what I want you to do. And I looked at it, and I said, you know, that's not going to work here. So I got a team, the compliance, and I got members of our commercial team. I got members of our sales support team, members of our industrial team and our HR team. And we took a look at the policy, we took a look at the limits and the frequency and how we are going to report, how we're going to record, and we came to an agreement so that when I did roll it out, it wasn't compliance saying it's not a compliance policy, it was all of our policy on what our limits will be, what our frequency will be, when we can do these things, when we can't, such as, you know, when we're in the negotiation process, we don't participate. These sort of events. That's kind of what I've done. I have really, one of the skills I really learned at GlaxoSmithKline was about business partnering and getting the business partners on board and understanding that these policies and procedures and directives, as we call them in Braskem, are business owned, not compliance owned. We support and we enforce, but the business owns it.
And integrating it into the business is so important because then it becomes essentially a part of how we make decisions every day. And compliance and ethics becomes assessed as part of the bottom line and not a separate activity or a one-off. But, you know, building that business case and the partnership with key functional stakeholders is critical.
That's a really valid point. One thing I forgot to mention, we do have a business process improvement group here. You'd be surprised with a chemical company that we wouldn't have something like that, but we do. And I've really established a strong partnership with that group. So we are looking at the business process from end to end and where we need to, as you said, integrate controls versus bolting on controls. And that's been a very valuable part of our progress over the past 2.5 years.
So, Joe, in your experience as a compliance officer, we've seen so many different approaches to structuring the compliance and ethics function in an organization, and especially recently with research and some of the, I would say, kind of scandals that are hitting, you know, the front pages. There's a lot of discussion around developing independent judgment and the criticality of that for the role of the compliance officer, really being the advocate for the workforce and putting the values into action. And there's some debate, you know, should compliance report into the general counsel's office? Should compliance report directly to CEO? Should they have a direct line to the board? In your experience, what is your guidance in this area? What is your current reporting structure and what do you think is ideal?
Our current reporting structure is right to the board of directors. So my boss, the chief compliance officer, reports right to the board. I do not report to the CEO in the U.S., and I think that's a very good position to be in. I think reporting to the general counsel can potentially have a conflict where they're trying to defend the company while also making sure the company is behaving. And I think there's a natural conflict there. We do not report into the general counsel, which I think is good. Also, we're not dependent on the executive team, the CEO, whether it be Braskem overall or Braskem in the U.S. for my budget. And while I do sit on his team, I really try to create a good balance, being a good teammate with the ability to say no when necessary. I think that's very valuable. And I can tell you that the team I work with here are very professional, very well-intentioned, but none of us knows how to do the right thing all the time. And having an independent, objective perspective, at least ask the question. That's what I'm trying to do with Brownskin, is get us to not a compliance level where everyone complies with policies and procedures, but I want to get to a conversational level where if you see something's not right, ask a question and maybe just prompt some other thoughts in the person's mind that's giving the direction they hadn't thought of. So I think that independence is very key, and I'm very vigilant, even with apparently small business-led controls which could impact our independence, such as, well, the CEO has to approve all consulting contracts, or they want to approve all additional headcount. Well, you can, but not for me. talk to my leader about having that additional approval, and we can do that. You need to be careful of setting up any unintended precedents. Unfortunately, I have seen in the past where compliance has gone right to the CEO, and the chief compliance officer is really happy to be on the team and trying to demonstrate teamwork, and sometimes gets lost from an objectivity standpoint.
Looking at kind of training and measurement, tell me a little bit about your approach to scale training, given that you are, operating kind of at a broad scale from kind of country risk management and the changing risk profiles.
So we usually deliver at least one or two global training initiatives a year. Last year we did Code of Conduct. This year we're refreshing our business courtesies training, and we're doing conflicts of interest training. So we do that. We do it via e-learning. I actually think LRN has developed a couple of the modules for us. But I also look at the metrics. What are the controls and the measures telling us in the U.S.? And then I do some targeted training around, if I start to see that some performance is slipping, why is that slipping? Let's look at the root cause. Is it because people have become unaware? It might be time to refresh. Last year in December, we just did our own custom module, and I just called it refresher training. We had so many policies and procedures, which we had communicated throughout the year, of the changes, but I thought, it's a good idea. Let's put a one-hour module together and hit the key points just to get it back in the front of people's minds. We do track their progress on our learning management system. We know who's taken the courses and who hasn't. And in Brascam, 5% of everyone's bonus is evaluated by me. They have certain objectives they need to meet, compliance with policies and procedures, attending mandatory training, that sort of thing. And if they don't attend the training, there's a financial impact to our team members. So I usually get 100% participation, and it requires a little bit of follow-up, but not a great deal. But that's how we do it.
How about, your kind of shop floor or manufacturing? How are you training or bringing that aspect of the workforce into your program strategy?
So we have five manufacturing sites and an R&D site here in the U.S. I get it out to each of those sites twice a year. So we have town hall meetings at the beginning and the mid-year. I'm actually in the mid-year cycle now, and I go and we get everyone in the plant into the conference room or a meeting room, and I have a half hour in which I talk to them about what progress we've made and where our emphasis is moving forward and what support I need from them. I then follow that up with a 90-minute meeting with the site leadership teams and go into a little bit more depth and give them a little bit more background to their employees through. And the two trainings I mentioned earlier, the business courtesies and conflict of interest, we fortunately in the U.S., everyone has access to a computer and computer-based training, even our operators. So they'll go into a room and they'll be expected to take that training. But again, I tell them it's coming. At the leadership meetings, I propose dates for when I want to do the training. And we agree which dates I'll do it. I'll launch it. I've never had a disagreement. But again, from a partnership standpoint, I prefer not to say I'm going to do it on this date. I said, this is what I propose. How's it fit with your schedule? And because we have that, we reach that agreement between the business and compliance, I get considerable cooperation and support from the leaders.
So as we wrap up, Joe, just, if you looked into a crystal ball, any forecasting in terms of what you think are going to be some key priorities in the next 3 to 5 years in the E&C space?
priorities to me, I think we're, from what I can tell, there's a lot of work being done on data analytics and big data. And I think compliance has done, the compliance field has done a lot of catching up in the 16 or 17 years I've been in it. And I think we probably have some more catching up to do when it comes to using big data and metrics. And maybe, I'm sure there are some organizations that are well advanced, but just the nature of the people I think that are in compliance are probably not the data scientific type. And I think there's value in embracing some of those resources and skills and helping us be better able to identify trends and maybe forestall the major issues. I think our society's values change very quickly and can be quite diverse from time to time. And how do we communicate to employees what we expect when they're working for us on our time? I think that's going to continue to be a challenge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I've learned a lot. And I thank you for joining us here at Principled and look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thank you, Marcia. Have a great day.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled Podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning, ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.